This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. Thanks for joining me this Wednesday. We'll begin our hour of old-time radio crime with Broadway Is My Beat. We'll hear the Robert Turk murder case, their story from October 18, 1952. After that, it's Nick Carter, Master Detective, and the case of the demented daughter, his story from May 28, 1946.
Broadway's My Beat, from Times Square to Columbus Circle, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world.
Broadway's My Beat, transcribed, with Larry Thor as Detective Danny Glover.
With autumn, twilight is of a new texture on Broadway. The faces of women are paler, their walk no more languid, not slow now. The swirls of mist have risen from colder waters, and the sheen of pavement is chill. The hawkers have moved into doorways, and the autumn deals are pulled out of topcoat pockets, and the smell of mothballs is on them. And the fall slogan, "You don't like it, kid, get lost." And because autumn came too swiftly, and you have nothing planned, you set the deal. And still it happens. You get lost. And another quality, autumn twilight on gray stone, the place of drifting and changeling shadows that move slowly or briefly on unending twilight. The segment of city reserved for the housing, the considering, the analysis of violence, police headquarters. And in it, the room. The office, where now is twilight talk and autumn moments held close against the time of their shattering. Where I was, and Detective Mugman.
I've been thinking, Danny.
Huh?
Been looking at this newspaper and thinking. It's been years since the wife and I have been to a football game. Together, I mean.
Oh, maybe next Saturday you could...
And she says she's lost a taste for it. She says, too many things to do around the house. Go yourself, she says. All those young kids there, she says. You think that's why, then?
Why what?
Why she won't go. Used to be a time she and I couldn't get enough of it. College games, day, night. Now she tells me, go yourself. All those young people. That's why, huh? Maybe if I said to her, oh, hi, Gino. Come on in, join the coffee clutch.
Thank you indeed. Some other time. As now, there is murder being done.
What are you talking about, Gino?
A relay from me to you of the very words screamed by a distressed lady into our central switchboard only a few minutes ago. The call was traced, Danny.
Where?
To a house on East 63rd, 1823 East, listed to a party name of Robert Turk.
Let's go, Mugman. Try the door, Mugman. Come on. Whew. Yeah. Come here. Look. Incense.
Smells real exotic.
Yeah. I'll take a whiff of this water glass. Make a comment, Mugman.
Something with opium in it, probably laudanum. Must have been quite a party. Wonder who cried murder. I wonder who... Hey, Danny, look.
Parakeet.
Yeah. Neck twisted. Dead. This is quite a joint, huh? Seven armed idols. Crazy looking dolls. Pictures on the wall. Your back teeth rattling, Danny?
Where's that music coming from? There's the speaker, but...
Yeah, machine must be in the other room. I got a friend that's got one. She dead?
No. Made the call, though. Didn't even have time to hang up. You try the phone.
Hello? Hello? Nothing, Daddy. I think she called up and yelled murder on account of the bird, then got carried away with it all and passed out.
Maybe.
This room do it to you, too?
What?
The idols again. Sawdust dolls. It's going to sound silly, but I'm going to say it. Black magic, huh? Oh, don't look at me like that. Just take a peek, will you? For instance, here, this thing. A doll in a baby dress. Eyes bandaged. Arms and legs tied. Hey, what's this stuff?
I don't know. It looks like a weed of some sort. Seaweed, maybe.
What's been done to this doll? Pierced with thorns.
Find out where that music's coming from and turn it off.
Yeah. You gotta be in this room. It's the only one. Danny! Girl wasn't kidding when she called, was she?
Dressed like that, tunic, Roman sandals. What is this, Mugovan?
I don't know, Danny. I don't have any idea what it is. I only got a name for it, probable suicide. I make a flash judgment like that because the guy lying on the floor has a cut throat and he's holding a weird-looking dagger in his hand. Outside of that, I said my piece for the day. Your turn, Danny.
I don't know. I just don't know.
And turn and walk once more through the nightmare place. And from effigy and idol and the brilliant wings of a dead parakeet, the ebb of twilight. On the face of the stilled girl, the lacework of early darkness, the swift stroking of nighttime. And move again through the grotesque violence. From initial robes of raw silk, from desk litter, other things, confirm the identity of the dead man. Robert Turk. And on the quickening flow of night, the stirring of the girl.
Mara, I want to go home. Take me home.
And gently, gently get from her finally an address and nothing else. So give her into a physician's care. Arrange that she be taken to her home. Then leave the place of masks and seaweed and death to the swarming of professionals with camera and dust powders. To another place, then, and another room, a simpler room, a plainer room, where sleep is. Only the magic words for it won't come. And suddenly it's a bright October morning. Check in at headquarters. Tell them you'll be at Maura Spencer's. Go there. Darkness is no longer on her face. Only sunlight and a bright smile. And she leans against the bulk of a young man, holds his arms close around her waist as she talks to you. Sways a little.
So strong. So strong. My fella's so strong.
Miss Spencer...
You two don't know each other, do you? I'll introduce you. This is Johnny Longstreet, my fellow. The boy I'm going to marry. And you? Who are you?
He told you, Mara. He's a policeman. Honey. Baby.
What, Johnny?
Tell the policeman to go away.
I can't do that, sweet. He wants something of me. You go over there and sit down. I'll find out what he wants.
Uh-uh. Do it from here.
Sweet. Sweet thing. What do you want of me?
What you couldn't tell us last night because you were passed out from drugs.
Was it a drug? Is that what Robert gave me to drink? He told me it was an exotic something, Johnny. He said it was a something that would make me fall in love with him all over again.
Did it? Did it, honey?
You go over there and sit down, sweet. Because I told you. I told you 1,000 times. Nothing could make me love Robert again. Not potions, not rituals, not strangle birds. So you go over there and sit down, sweetness. 200 pounds of college football player. And gentle and obedient and faithful as a hungry little boy. He throws himself at men and they're taken away on stretchers. And for me, he's a little boy. Be patient, sweet.
Maybe you're not over it, Miss Spencer.
Not over what?
The drug, whatever it was you drank.
Oh, no. No, you're wrong. Some doctor did things to me. Left me with a mind as clear as a bell. Anything you want, I'll clear it up for you.
Let's start with Robert Turk.
All right. With him. Once there was a cult, and Robert was its high priest. Somebody told me about it over cocktails, and I went with her to his place. It was exciting and dark. And Robert spoke of love to me. It was something I'd never known. Robert was a kind of man I'd never known.
How long ago was that?
A year ago.
But go on.
Then it got boring and dull and tiresome. And I resigned from the cult and from Robert.
But last night he finally persuaded you to see him.
You think so?
Tell me.
This was last night. Robert phoned me. Out of the blue, he called me, begged to see me. And because once there had been an emotion for him and excitement, I went. And he was in his toga, and he brought out all the props, and he performed and said incantations and fed me a potion and twisted the neck of a bird. And I laughed at him. And he went into another room and cut his throat. And I called you people, sipped my drink, and passed out.
That's how it was last night, huh?
Mm-hmm. Boring. That man's going to go away now, Johnny. Where were we, sweet? Johnny. Johnny Longstreet. What a wonderful boy you are. Johnny Longstreet.
Annie?
Yes, what is it, Gino?
Lady out here to see you. Says her name is Turk. Mrs. Edna Turk, widow of the late deceased Robert.
Show her in.
This way to see Danny Clover. Call me if you need me, Lieutenant.
Thank you, Sergeant. Please sit down, Miss Turk.
Robert Turk was my husband.
Yes, I...
I came here this morning to tell you about him, because this afternoon I plan to go shopping. And I don't want any of you people coming around my house and interfering with my plans.
It's nice of you to stop in, Mrs. Turk. Just go right ahead.
I've learned that my husband slit his throat.
Or had it done for him. We don't know.
Just incidentally, Mr. Clover, I left my husband yesterday morning. It would be pleasant to toy with the possibility that he killed himself because of me. But I'm sure Robert did it for the excitement of it. You don't jump out of your seat and slam your hands on the desk and lean forward and yell, "What are you saying, woman?"
Just go on, Mrs. Turk.
Robert was out of his mind, you know. Still no reaction. Some of his best friends were witch doctors. Nothing. I mean it. Witch doctors, black magic fellows. A lot of them in Manhattan. Boys and girls who look like you and me. Only nuts. Play around with the occult for kicks.
I'll want their names.
I wouldn't know them. As soon as Robert put punk to his incense, I knew his buddies were coming over, so I left.
Do you know Maura Spencer?
A long time ago. Once at a party. 100% party where nothing stranger than everybody getting looped took place. Robert pointed her out to me and said she was a high priestess. At the time, Maura didn't have her shoes on, so I told myself this is no high priestess if I ever saw one.
What else?
Nothing else. My husband was out of his mind. He was looking for kicks. He found all of them, then he ran out. Nothing else left but put knife to throat.
Take a look, Danny.
Hmm?
Came out of communications a second ago.
Johnny Longstreet?
Yeah, just now under a subway train at Times Square Station. Fella was pushed. Johnny Longstreet, dead. It's still your turn, Danny. Got a comment?
You are listening to Broadway's My Beat, written by Morton Fine and David Friedkin, and starring Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover.
CBS Radio brings you every kind of show, pleasure for everyone, wonderful hours of fun. Turn your dial for a smile, entertainment all the while. You'll hear the best wherever you go, just tune to CBS Radio. CBS Radio.
October spreads its golden light over Broadway. The mob hurries down Saturday Street. It's the day of the stadium again, and the soft drink, and the old locomotive yell, and the very small hot dog for 35 cents. And it's the day when higher education comes into its own, when an English student punts a bladder and everybody screams. The word is bula bula, the flower chrysanthemum, and everybody's either your buddy or your arch rival. Get with it, kid. Today it's just like going to college. Below all of it, in the subway, the non-ticket holder is still proud, but excitement of another kind. A man who fell or jumped or was thrown onto the tracks in front of a subway train. Where I was, above me on the platform, Detective Muggerman.
I'm trying to tell you.
All right, you just stand over there with that man. Hey, Danny.
Give me a hand up, Muggerman. Thanks. Any witnesses?
Yeah, a couple, just dying for the opportunity.
Yeah.
All right, you, mister. Tell the lieutenant here what you saw.
Like a bird in flight.
Look, friend.
I looked up and there he was in midair, as if he were suspended. And whatever held him, severed.
Did you see anyone push him?
No. Then gracefully he began...
Go home, look. Mister. All right, buddy, what did you see?
I was standing beside him. As a matter of fact, I was practically looking right at him. Then it happened.
What did?
Why, he wasn't there anymore. I heard a scream, and there he was like he is now.
Anybody push him?
Who pushed him?
Okay.
Take over, Muggerman. I'm going back to headquarters.
Here, Danny. Put it in the hat.
Huh?
Our pool, Danny. Our football pool. Don't be coy. Pony up 2 bits. Put it in the hat.
All right. What have I got?
What you've got. Notre Dame, and you're giving 20 points.
Oh. The game's over, isn't it?
Forgive me. You lost. The way you've been helter and skelter, I didn't get a chance to collect from you this morning. So I am seizing this opportunity by the horns to collect from you...
Besides the hat, Gino.
Huh?
Besides the 2 bits in the hat, what else have you got?
Oh, that.
You're a big winner today, Gino, but don't press your luck too far.
Don't be harsh, Danny. It is not often I am smiled upon by Dame Fortune. What I've got, as follows. Nothing new on the death by subway of Johnny Longstreet, fullback, third-year college boy.
Run down a Morris Spencer I asked for. You got that?
This I got.
Gino.
Excuse it, Danny. I was making in my mind an explanation to Mrs. Tartaglia how come I got an anonymous quarter to put in the piggy bank. Morris Spencer, huh?
Whenever you feel up to it, Gino.
Rundown on the lady in question was made as per your request. These items have been found. That she was a finance to the deceased Johnny Longstreet, and that she is a widow of a year and a half standing.
Oh?
2.5 years ago, Morris Spencer was married to a fellow Charles Lane by name. Said fellow was found, according to these records, on August 3, 1949, on a sidewalk 8 floors below the window from which he had thrown himself. As per testimony at coroner's inquest by his widow, Bora.
Let me see those records, Dino.
Goes without saying. As you review them, you will come to the place where I have made a pencil check mark, easily erased, besides some information which I personally thought would be of some interest to you.
Well, you want to tell me about it, Gino?
As long as you ask. This Charles Lane, deceased of a running jump from a window, former husband of Maura Spencer, was in partnership at the time of his death with one Spence Griffin in the novelty and election button business. This Mr. Griffin is now to be had at his home address, 1923 West 18th. I took the liberty this was of some interest to you.
No apologies, Gino. You did splendidly. Thank you very much.
Yeah?
Is your name Griffin?
That's right.
I'm from the police. Name's Danny Clover.
Well, is it going to take long enough for you to come in, or are you just selling...
If you don't mind.
Oh, sure not. Come on. Have a chair. Now, you don't mind me trying to squeeze into this outfit all the while, do you?
Well, go right ahead.
Big thing. My alma mater won today. Everybody's dancing tonight, so I got to get into a size 42 because a married lady named Janice Drinkwater is going to show up. When am I going to stop kidding myself? You want to give me a hand here?
Thanks.
Kidding yourself about what?
Janice Drinkwater. College, when I knew her, it was Janice Galt. Now I'm size 48, and every year we meet at this dance, both of us 10 pounds heavier and tell each other we're both half...
Oh. Did you go to college with a man named Charles Lane?
Charlie? He's dead.
I know.
He jumped off the porch. Very high porch. No, I didn't go to college with him.
He was your business partner, though, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm. Every year, a wrestle with his tie.
Why did Charles Lane jump?
Every year, Janice straightens it for me and wags a fat finger at me. Why do I do it? Why do I dance with her and make believe to myself I can't feel the stays?
I'm talking to you, Mr. Griffin. Why did Charles Lane jump?
I don't know. No idea. I was there when it happened, you know.
No, I didn't.
Yeah. Party for his wife. Let's see, what was her name?
Maura?
Mm-hmm, that's right, Maura. Ever see her?
I've seen her.
What kind of a kick she on these days?
What do you mean?
The party. She had a formula, crazy death curse or something. We all sat around on the floor, beat on things in rhythm, banged things together. Half the people on the weed, I guess. And sure enough, half hour later, after we'd been making jerks out of ourselves, comes a scream from the porch, the balcony.
Who screamed?
Maura. Jumping up and down, screaming, crying, carrying on, pointing out to the street, Charlie jumped! Nobody else got excited very much. Figure it all happened because we'd made that circle with all that mumbo-jumbo. You know something?
What?
I hope Janice doesn't show tonight, then I don't ever have to go anymore. Brother.
Leave the man struggling to thin himself back into a memory. Leave a man who had been there when Maura Spencer's husband had fallen into death. And walk then. For a wild drift with an autumn day, with swarm coming into city, fighting crowd going home, and somewhere near river, find a bench, sit a while, watch tug and barge on autumn waters, hold it back for a while. Then consider three deaths: Robert Turk, Johnny Longstreet, Charles Lane. Then make a decision. Leave the still place by the river, go back to headquarters, get Mugovan in on it.
Check these out of supply, Danny. What you asked for.
Yeah, my holster and gun off the chair, huh, Muggerman?
Oh, sure, Danny. Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
The way you figure, huh? The way you have to do it, huh?
You got another way?
No, I guess I have. A woman, she's part of a man's life, gets to be a part of his dying. Three of them. Count them. Three.
Oh, see you, Muggerman.
It's your life, Danny.
Again. I'll see you.
Yes. Oh. Oh, it's you.
Hello, Miss Spencer. Do you mind if I come in?
I wish you would.
Thanks. You alone?
Johnny isn't here, if that's what you mean.
He's dead.
Oh?
Didn't you know?
No.
Happened earlier today. Subway train killed him.
Then it really did happen.
I just told you.
No, that's not what I mean.
What did you mean?
Something you wouldn't understand. I knew Johnny wasn't coming back. Who are you?
Are you all right, Miss Spencer?
I haven't been drinking or anything. You're a policeman. I remember.
That's right. Do you remember Charles Lane?
I was married once. To him. He's dead, too. He jumped from a place and died.
Jumped?
He had to.
What do you mean?
There were some people, and we crouched together in a circle, and we said some things. And we wished it. And Charles died.
Why did Robert Turk die?
He cut his throat. You know that.
He committed suicide too, didn't he?
Like Charles. He had to.
Because you rejected him?
That's part of it. But this. These.
Hmm? What are they?
Little ivory sticks. They're Chinese. These are why Robert died. You throw them, like dice. And whatever pattern they make when they fall, that's what happens.
Do it.
You want me to?
Sure.
You're really interested?
I want you to.
Listen.
Yeah?
Do you know about me?
I want you to tell me.
All three of them. Charles and Johnny and Robert. I wanted them dead. They died.
Yes.
I can do that, you know.
I know. Miss Spencer.
Mara.
All right, Mara. I'm going to take my coat off. It's warm.
I want you to.
And this, my gun. I'll put it here on the desk. Now, show me about the ivory sticks.
Stand there, and I'll kneel on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Now. Come, look. You see?
What?
The pattern it makes. It tells me I'm very beautiful, and I will live a long time.
I'd like to try.
All right. Here. You kneel. I'll stand here.
What do they say?
Death.
But you haven't looked.
They say death. Johnny did. And Robert. Charles. Now they say you. And that's why, Mr. Clover, you have to die. Because I want it. And I can do these things. Make men die.
There's no more blanks in the gun. It's empty.
Die. Die. Die.
You killed all of them, didn't you?
Yes, and you. Die.
Let's go.
Die!
It rolls over Broadway now, the shock of the night. And the sound of it is a thing of laughter and trumpet and a million-throated voice. And from a thousand streets they gather to come here, to scream with the roar, let the wave of night roll over them, gather them up, spill them into the doorway of their choice. It's Broadway, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world. Broadway, my beat.
Broadway's My Beat stars Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover, with Charles Calvert as Tartaglia and Jack Crucian as Mugovan. The program is transcribed and directed by Elliot Lewis, with musical score composed and conducted by Alexander Courage. In tonight's story, Sammy Hill was heard as Mara. Featured in the cast were Lee Millar, Truda Marson, and Lou Merrill. Bill Anders speaking. On most of these same stations. Tonight, Vaughn sends his songs our way from Duke University, Durham, North Carolina. Also ahead for CBS radio listeners tonight is Tarzan's gripping exploits in the City of Sleep, the capital of the continent's narcotics industry. On Gangbusters this evening, it's the case of the Christmas trio with a strange kind of Christmas spirit involved in an even stranger Christmas time wedding. Enjoy Vaughn Monroe, Tarzan, and Gangbusters all ahead tonight on CBS Radio.
And remember, the comedy treat that can't be beat is Jack Benny Time, Sundays on the CBS Radio Network.
Bye.
matter? What is it?
It's a case for Nick Carter, master detective.
Yes, it's another case for that most famous of all manhunters, the detective whose ability at solving crime is unequaled in the history of detective fiction, Nick Carter, Master Detective.
But, Phyllis, it's true. I know it's true.
But it's not true, June, darling. Don't you suppose I'd know it if you were going crazy?
But why do I hear these noises all the time? Why am I so cold when it's really warm in here? Why
Listen,
do I...
Listen, June, you're just working yourself up over nothing. Now, why don't you
relax? Holly told me my mother acted the same way, Phyllis.
My husband didn't mean that.
He said Mother heard noises like thunder in her ears. He told me that she was cold and shivering no matter what the temperature was. Alex told me that.
Well, even if that's true, it doesn't prove...
It does. I'll kill myself before I let them take me away. I won't go to an asylum. I won't. I won't.
A young girl convinced that she is going insane. A fiancé who is not convinced, who doubts that it can be true in spite of the evidence. An appeal to Nick Carter, Master Detective. The uncovering of a strange and unnatural plot. Not for money, not for power, but for hate. This is the story unfolded in The Case of the Demented Daughter.
That must be Randy Wyatt. I made a date for him to see you at 10:30.
Is Mr. Carter here yet?
Yes, he is. Won't you come in?
Thank you. Mr. Carter?
Yes?
I'm Randy Wyatt. Your father and mine used to be pretty good friends. That's why I'm taking the liberty of asking you to help me now.
Why, no liberty at all. Come in, sit down.
Thank you, sir.
What seems to be the trouble?
Well, last night I got this note from the girl I'm engaged to. She sent my ring back with it.
May I see it? It's no use, Randy, darling. I'm doomed. And I won't have you burdened with an insane wife. So this is goodbye. Your heartbroken June.
I tried to call her as soon as I got the note, but the housekeeper wouldn't let me talk to her. Says she was too ill to come to the phone.
Well, have you seen any signs of this insanity she speaks of?
I know, and I don't believe it. There's been something funny going on somewhere. She's been a little more nervous than usual when we've been out together this past month, but that isn't insanity.
You say when we've been out together. Does that mean that you don't see her at home much?
Well, for the past month, she seemed to prefer to get out of the house. Doesn't want to stay home anymore.
Well, have you seen her at home at all?
Well, I was there one night about a week ago. Her sister Phyllis and her brother-in-law, Alex Benson, were out, and we spent the evening there alone.
Did she seem to be the same as usual?
Why, except for one little thing, yes. She complained that she felt cold, almost shivery. The house was cold even for me. The thermometer said 78, but it wasn't as warm as that in there. But the fact that she was cold when the thermometer said 78 seemed to prey on her mind. I tried to tell her the thermometer was wrong and that I was chilly too, but she insisted I was just being nice to her.
I see. Well, is she any reason to be afraid of going out of her mind?
When I was waiting for June the other night, Alex, her brother-in-law, warned me that she was acting queer. Said he felt I ought to know. Told me her mother died in the Harrah Hill Sanitarium. I tried to laugh at him, but he insisted he and Phyllis had seen definite symptoms.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else live there with June beside Phyllis and her husband?
The housekeeper, Miss Everett, a cook and a maid.
They must have plenty of money.
Oh, yes, June's father was a rich man, and he left his entire estate to be divided between the two girls.
How long ago did her mother go to the sanitarium?
Oh, let me see. June was six then, so it must have been 1932. She died there in 1940.
I see. What does this Alex Benson do?
He has a very good business, I understand. Doing very well.
And this housekeeper you spoke of, has she been with him long?
Since a couple of years after Miss Kemper was taken away. She's a peppery old lady, but an excellent housekeeper. She and Phyllis brought June up.
I'd like to talk to your fiancé, Wyatt. Can you arrange it?
That's what I'd hoped you'd say, Mr. Carter. June isn't crazy, I know that. Just as sure as I know my own name.
Well, when can we see her? Around 5 this afternoon, perhaps?
We can try. Where shall I meet you?
You better be here at the office about 4:30. We'll go up together.
I'll be here. Oh, Mr. Carter, I do hope you can straighten this out.
Well, I'll certainly do what I can, Wyatt.
You're swell, Mr. Carter. Well, see you at 4:30. Goodbye.
So long.
Goodbye, Mr. Wyatt. Oh, the poor kid. Losing her mind at her age.
I'm not at all sure she is, Patsy.
Huh?
Look at this note she sent Wyatt.
Well, What about it? Writing looks awkward, but she was probably upset.
Well, look closely. See how the pencil bears down much harder in some places than in others?
Yes.
That's not always in the places where the lines would naturally be heavier.
Which means?
One explanation would be that somebody was guiding her hand, forcing her to write this.
Oh.
Patsy, I think we'll do some checking up.
Okay. What'll we do?
Call Scubby the paper. Ask him for a full report on both Phyllis and Alex Benson.
Uh-huh.
Society doings and any other information he may find in the morgue.
Yeah.
Also tell him to check up on Alex's business and financial ratings.
All right. Anything else?
Yes, I want you to call on the housekeeper. Give her some excuse. Find out all you can about her.
I'll tell you what. I'll pretend I'm making a checkup of the conditions under which housekeepers work for some magazine, say. That'll do it.
Good. While you do that, I'm going down to the surrogate's office and take a look at the father's will. If there's any conspiracy going on, there's very likely to be money involved.
Okay, Nick. See you here as soon as I get the dope on Mrs. Everett. As I told you when you called, young lady, I can give you only a few minutes.
Well, I'm glad you could see me at all, Mrs. Everett.
We can sit here in the breakfast room.
Thank you.
Now, ask your questions and I'll answer them, if they're not personal.
Well, they are personal, but only in a general way. How long have you been here?
Since 1936, the year after Mrs. Kempel died.
Uh-huh. Had you worked previously?
I had. 14 years. Two jobs. In each case, I left because I was offered more money. If somebody offered me more money than I'm getting here, I'd leave tomorrow.
Are you married, Mrs. Everett?
I was. My husband died.
Any children?
I have not. I hate them.
How do you find working conditions here?
I've seen better and I've seen worse.
How do you get along with your employers?
Mr. Kempel was a fine man. We got along well.
Oh. Do you mean you're having trouble with Mr. and Mrs. Benson?
No, Phyllis and Alex are all right. We got along well enough, but that June, I can't stand her. I never could.
Oh. Do you have any special reason to feel that way? Or is it because you don't like children?
She's a brat. Always was. Used to play tricks on me when I first came here. Left a toy wagon for me to stumble over when she was little, and I fell and broke my ankle. I'd have left here then, but Mr. Kempel offered me so much money I couldn't afford to go. But I made that June pay for what she did. Why, I'm talking too much. What else do you want to know?
You wouldn't want to tell me what they pay you here, would you?
I wouldn't. I told you not to get personal. Now, I gotta go. Good day.
Goodbye, and thank you, Mrs. Everett. All right, Scubby, I'll tell him. Thanks. Goodbye.
Oh, hi, Patsy.
Hello.
How'd you make out?
Here's a typewritten report of my interview. I didn't like that Mrs. Everett at all.
Huh. But she doesn't like June, huh?
Mm-mm.
Well, good work, Patsy. That covers it.
You really like it, Nick?
I do. Get your hat. We're taking a ride out to Harrow Hill Sanitarium where Mrs. Kempel died. I want to talk to the doctor out there.
Right with you, Nick. Walter went out after you phoned, but he'll be back pretty soon.
Well, have you heard from Scubby yet?
Oh, yes. He says he found plenty of stuff about Phyllis and Alex, but nothing you'd want.
Hmm.
Except that Alex's business is in a pretty bad shape. He needs to expand and has been having trouble getting capital to do it.
Yes?
Scubby says he couldn't find out whether he'd put any of his wife's money into it or not.
I see.
What'd you find out at the surrogate's office?
I found that Mr. Kempel left a large fortune, divided equally between the two girls. There were two interesting clauses in the will.
Hmm?
One was that should either daughter develop a mental weakness of any kind, the other daughter was to have control of the money and administer it for the other's benefit.
Hey, Nick, that's something.
And the other, peculiar. It's a statement that since the circumstances surrounding the birth of the two sisters were fully taken into account in drawing the will, no claims on that basis were to be allowed under penalty of forfeiture of all rights under the will.
What in the world does that mean?
Wish I knew. I called the lawyer who drew it, but he refused to talk about it. So I'm having Walter look up the birth certificates of both girls. Might be some help there.
Uh-huh. You think the doctor at the sanitarium could help you?
I don't know. I hope so. That's one reason I want to have a talk with him.
I'm sorry I can't be of more help to you, Mr. Carter, but my knowledge of the Kempel family is limited to Mrs. Kempel herself, as I said.
Doctor, tell me, did Mrs. Kempel know what was happening to her?
Oh, yes, some years before it actually happened, it became evident that sooner or later she would have trouble. Hers, as I said, was a case of schizophrenia, split personality. And in her case, the other side of her was homicidal.
But you say it can be inherited, Doctor.
It can be, but fortunately, it rarely is.
Well, thank you for your time, Dr. Lennox, and for your information. I think it'll help us to get to the bottom of this.
Turn left here, Mr. Carter. The Kemple place is halfway down the next block.
Nick, did I hear Waldo telling you he could find only Phyllis's birth certificate?
That's right, Patsy. No record of June's birth at all.
Huh.
White, do you know where June is born?
No, I don't. Oh, by the way, Mr. Carter, I tried to get in touch with June to tell her we were coming, but the housekeeper wouldn't let me speak to her. Said she was asleep. Darn that woman, I don't trust her at all.
Is this the house?
Yeah, that's it.
You'll have to wait in the car, Patsy. Mrs. Everett knows you.
Right, Nick.
I hope we can get in.
Oh, I think we'll manage somehow.
If Phyllis is here, she'll let me in.
Maybe there's nobody here. Think I hear someone coming.
When there's somebody sick in the house, you ought to know better than to make so much noise.
Mrs. Everett, I'm sorry, but we must see June Kemple at once.
She's in her room and in no condition to see anyone at once. Who are you?
This is Mr. Nick Carter, Miss Everett. Please let us see June.
What's a detective doing here?
I'm not here as a detective. Rather, as a friend. May we see June?
Very well. She's in her room. You can go up, but make it as short as you can. She's sick.
Thank you. Come on, Mr. Carter. I can't understand Miss Everett's dislike for June. She never has a good word for her.
Some people are like that, Wyatt. Some people just don't
seem... Randy! Help! Help!
That's June. Come on.
What,
June, honey, what's wrong?
I couldn't open the door. I couldn't make my hands open the door.
It was probably stuck, June.
No, it wasn't the door. It was me. My hands.
Why, what do you mean by that, Miss Kemple?
It's just the way my mother acted when she was sick. Alex told me about it last night. She couldn't make her hands do what she wanted. I tried to open my door, and I couldn't. I just couldn't. I had to try and try before I could get it open. Oh, Randy. It was like a nightmare. A horrible nightmare.
Come now, honey. Don't cry like that. I just can't stand it. Please, honey.
Wyatt, look here.
What is it, sir?
Notice this?
Why, it... Well, that's wax, isn't it?
It is. Wax that someone stuffed in the latch of a door to make it difficult to open. Not impossible, just difficult.
Then there is a plot to drive her insane. I knew it.
Either that or a plot to make her think she's insane. Nothing very mental about a piece of wax in a door lock.
Listen, June, honey, marry me right now. Let me get you out of this house. You'll be safe once I get you away from here.
Oh, no, Randy, I can't. It wouldn't be fair to you.
Listen. Someone just came in.
Who tells you about that? Randy Wyatt and a detective are up talking to June, and she shouldn't be seeing anyone. She's sick. I tried to keep them out, but I couldn't. I'll go up and see what they're doing. Is everything all right, June?
Yes, Miss Benson. There's nothing wrong with June.
I'm surprised you felt you had to see her when she's so ill.
Miss Benson, this is Mr. Carter, a friend of mine.
How do you do?
And I wanted him to see June.
Well, now that you've seen her, you better go. Come, June. I'll take you back to your room. You better lie down and be quiet.
All right, sir. But it's no use. It's no use.
Well, Mr. Carter, I guess we...
Yes. Come on, Wyatt.
I'm sorry that Phyllis seems a little abrupt, but we're really very much worried about June. As I told you, Randy, she's exhibiting all the symptoms her mother had just before she was taken away.
Alex, this is Mr. Carter. He knew my father years ago.
How are you, Mr. Benson?
How do you do, sir?
Mr. Benson, do you happen to know where June was born?
June?
Yes.
But no, I don't think I do. Wait a minute. It seems to me I've heard Phyllis say that she was born in Barnstable.
And where's that?
Well, it's about an hour out of the city, I believe, on the River Turnpike. Phyllis, wasn't June born in Barnstable?
Yes, she was. Oh, Alex, I don't know what we're going to do with that girl. She's possessed with that one idea. And since Mother... Oh, I don't know what to do.
Come on, Mr. Carter. We better get out of here.
Yes. Our work is finished here. For now.
Jake, aren't you going to eat anything before you go?
We'll grab a sandwich and a cup of coffee on the way. Why, oh, Sim Carter,
but
you
Nick,
have to go...
what are you expecting to find in Barnstable?
June was born there. If her birth certificate doesn't give us a clue to that clause in Kemple's will, I'll find somebody there who can. Patsy, you wait here at the office for me.
But what do you expect from me, Mr. Carter? You say you found the birth certificate in good order.
After we finally got that guy to open up town hall so we could have a look. Boy, was he hopping mad at being called away from his supper.
Dr. Jessup, you signed the birth certificate, so you should be able to answer my question. What is there about June's birth that would cause her father to put that strange clause in his will?
I couldn't tell you, Mr. Carter. Mrs. Kemple came up here for a rest, and June was born while she was here.
Dr. Jessup, suppose I should tell you that I think someone is trying to make June think she's losing her mind because her mother did. Would that stir your memory?
Losing her mind because her mother... Oh, no, that's impossible. Why, she... pardon me, I must see who's at the door.
Certainly, we'll wait.
It's strange that they should come to the back door. Nick, he knows something. Sure as you're a foot high, he knows something.
Yes, Waldo, I think he does. And I think he's going to talk.
Uncle, no!
Nick, sounds as if he's in...
Dr. Jessup, what's wrong? Dr. Jessup.
You're right. See Leona Perkins. She... Look at Nick. He was shot twice, right through the chest.
So I see.
But we didn't hear no shots.
Silencer, apparently. Waldo, see if you can spot anyone out there.
Right, Nick. I'll get him.
Oh, poor guy. I hadn't come here to ask... Waldo! Waldo! Did you...
It's no good, Nick. I thought I saw a guy hiding in the trees there, so I took a couple of shots at him. I guess it was just shadows.
You ought to know better than to go shooting off that old .44 of yours blindly that way.
But, Nick, I...
Waldo, you stay here. Call the sheriff. Tell him what happened. I'm going to find Leona Perkins before someone tries to eliminate her, too. You got that, Patsy? Tell Matty to have his man keep constant watch on the Kemple house. And tell me just who goes in or out.
Uh-huh. And he's to wait until you come and report to you.
Right. I'll pick you up at the office on my way back. Oh, and have Randy Wyatt there, too, so he can go with us.
Where did you say you are now?
In Barnstable, at the home of Leona Perkins. She was June's nurse after she was born. She knows the answers if anyone does. All right, I'll see you at the office, Patsy. Sorry, Mrs. Perkins, but I had to get that call through without delay. Now... You know Dr. Jessup, of course.
Yes, of course. I worked with him for 15 years. He sent you to me?
Yes. I'm sorry to have to tell you this, but Dr. Jessup has just been killed.
Dr. Jessup killed?
Yes, shot. By someone who wanted to keep him from telling me what I came to Barnstable to find out.
Dr. Jessup dead. I can't believe it.
Before he died... He told me to come to you. But you would tell me what the mystery is about June Kemple's birth.
Why are you asking these questions, Mr. Carter?
Because June's sanity is in danger.
June insane? She can't be.
Why not? Her mother was, I understand. Died in the sanitarium.
Then you understand wrongly, Mr. Carter. Her mother is perfectly sane and she's still alive. Alive and well.
What's that you say?
Do I look insane to you?
You? Why... No, no, of course not.
Mr. Carter, I am June's mother.
You are June's mother?
I am. June is really my daughter.
Miss Perkins, I'm afraid I don't understand. Why was she brought up as the Kemple's child?
Mrs. Kemple had one daughter, and she wanted another, desperately. But she knew she was gradually going out of her mind. And she was afraid if she bore another child, it too might be susceptible to the same dread disease. So she decided to adopt a baby, but secretly, to prevent any possible discrimination against it. She made inquiries in several places. Dr. Jessup heard of her search and came to me.
How did he happen to come to you?
He was my doctor. My husband had just been killed in an accident, and my baby was to be born in 3 days. We were very poor, and I was frantic with worry. I had no money, Mr. Carter, no relatives. I'd never worked a day in my life. I could see no way to provide for the child who was coming.
And you agreed to give up your baby?
Yes. In a moment of weakness, I did. When June was born,
Dr. Jessup registered her as being born to Mrs. Kemple instead of to me. Oh, perhaps it was wrong of him, but he felt it was the wisest thing to do.
You've never seen her since?
No, Mr. Carter. Bitterly as I've regretted my decision, I've sworn I'd never try to see her again. And I never have.
Did anyone else beside you, the doctor, and the Kemples know of this?
No, not a soul. Even Phyllis was never told. She believes June to be her own natural sister.
I doubt that she does now. Mrs. Perkins, you must go back to the city with me at once. Not only June's sanity, but her life may be in danger at this very moment.
And you say you found some real evidence, Nick?
The best in the world, Patsy. I found Mrs. Perkins here.
Well, I don't understand, Nick.
You'll know the whole story in a few minutes. Just as soon as we get to the Kemples' house.
Is it a plot against June, Mr. Carter? Is she really all right?
Yes, Wyatt, I believe so. It'll take time to get her back on her feet, but basically she's as sane as you or I.
But who would want to do a thing like this?
It'd only be one person. And how she found out about it, I don't know. But she did, obviously.
Mr. Carter, how much further? I promised once I'd never see June again, but now I...
That's one promise that is better broken than kept. Well, here we are. Oh, that must be Maddie's man across the street. You three go in. I'll be with you as soon as I get his report.
I must protest, Mr. Carter. This is outrageous.
Sorry,
this
Mrs.
time
Everett.
Of night.
It has to be done this way.
Everybody's here, Nick. All except Phyllis. She's been in bed with a migraine headache ever since dinner.
Well, we'll go ahead without her.
Okay.
June?
Yes?
You say various things happened to you that seem to indicate that you're losing your mind.
Yes, Mr. Carter. Just like my poor mother when she was losing her mind.
How do you know about your mother?
Why, Alex told me.
Alex told you. Mr. Benson, may I ask if you knew Mrs. Kemple?
Why, no, I didn't. She died before I met Phyllis.
And how do you know how she acted while she was going to pieces?
Well, I've heard the story from Phyllis.
Complete with details?
Why, yes.
Recently?
Why, I guess she has told me more in the last few weeks than she ever did before, but what are you getting at?
I won't let them take me away. I'll kill myself first. I will.
Steady, June, steady. That won't be necessary. There's nothing wrong with you mentally, and there never has been.
But all those queer things.
Every single one of those things is a trick, suggestion, planted in your mind.
But my mother died in that place.
No, June, you're wrong. She didn't.
Why, Nick?
June's mother is alive and well today. I'd like to introduce her to you. Mrs. Leona Perkins.
This is the most fantastic story I ever heard. Are you sure?
I am. I have positive proof. Dr. Jessup's story and Mrs. Perkins' story, which can be backed up with documentary proof. And if you want something you can see for yourself, look at June's little finger. I've just now noticed how she has the same peculiar little crook at the end of it that Mrs. Perkins has.
By golly, Nick, you're right. It's just the same.
You're my mother. My real mother.
Yes, June, darling. Your real mother.
Oh, mother.
Mr. Carter, who in heaven's name would want to do this to June?
A person who was afraid that she might be susceptible to the thing that killed her mother, and consequently hated the person who wasn't. A person who wanted to prove that it was someone else, not her, who was the weak one.
Carter, do you realize what you're saying?
Unfortunately, Benson, I do.
But you mean that Phyllis?
Oh, of course he doesn't, Alex. That's sheer nonsense.
Mrs. Benson, didn't you help June write the note that broke her engagement to Randy Wyatt?
Yes, at her request.
After you talked me into doing it.
And didn't you suggest that June heard things and felt things? And then when you got her believing she did, didn't you suggest to Alex that those things were a sign of mental weakness?
She did. I can tell now. She was always asking me if I didn't feel this or hear that. I thought she was trying to help me, but...
I was trying to help.
Where have you been the last 2-3 hours?
In my room with a headache.
No, you weren't. You drove to Barnstable, shot Dr. Jessup so he couldn't tell me the secret and came back here. My man saw you come in. You sneaked in the back door and up to your room, changed your shoes because they got muddy in the doctor's backyard, and then you came down here to brazen it out. Randy, if you look, I'm sure you'll find the muddy shoes in her room, and you'll find the motor of her car still hot. And probably you'll find a gun in her car, too.
I'll take a look right now.
Stay where you are, all of you. You may find the muddy shoes, but I've got the pistol right here, and I'm going to kill you all. You're a pack of sneaking...
Better take her away, officer, before she hurts someone.
Officer,
I'll take it.
Nick!
All right. No harm done. Alex, take her upstairs. Keep her in her room.
Yes, Mr. Carter. Come on, Phyllis.
Sure. Lock me up. Just the way they locked my mother up. You think I'm crazy, but I'm not. I'm as sane as any of you. I'll show you.
How could you do such a thing, Phyllis? Why should you hate me so?
Why shouldn't I hate you? I've hated you from the moment I found those old letters of Father's after he died. Those letters from Dr. Jessup, which gave away the whole story. Dr. Jessup said he hoped I'd never suffer as my mother did. Said he could understand how pleased Father was to know that there was no possibility of you having inherited any tendency to a mental weakness. I knew what he meant, and I hated you for it. I wish I'd killed you long ago.
Come, Phyllis. You'll feel better in your own room. Mrs. Everett, will you come with us, please?
Of course, Mr. Benson.
Take your hands off. What a terrible thing.
Yes. If you never found those letters, this whole thing might never have happened. They not only turned her against June, they planted the fear of insanity in her own mind. And the hate and the fear together grew into a phobia that was too strong for her.
Mr. Carter, I don't know what to say. If there's any way I can repay you, you have only to name it.
Oh, yes, Mr. Carter. I feel as if a load had been lifted off my heart.
This is a wonderful thing you've done, Mr. Carter. A wonderful thing. God bless you for doing it.
Nick?
Hmm?
In the excitement, I forgot.
Forgot what?
Waldo.
Well, what about Waldo?
Waldo is being held in Barnstable on charge of killing Dr. Jessup.
What?
Yes. He called just before you got back. Said he'd try to explain what happened, but the sheriff didn't believe him. Especially since two shots had been fired from his pistol, and two shots killed Dr. Jessup.
Oh, poor Waldo. I suppose the more they questioned him, the more excited he got that he finally talked himself right into his cell.
Well, you better do something about it, Nick, before Waldo goes crazy. Before he...
Okay, Patsy. May I use your phone, June?
Certainly.
Oh, operator, I want the sheriff's office in Barnstable. Yes, the sheriff's office, that's right. I want to talk to the sheriff himself.
Yes, the sheriff.
Well, Nick, how about a little look into next week's story?
No sooner said than done, Hugh. It all started with a man being strangled in his hotel room in the very early hours of the morning.
And then went on to include a piece of silk torn from a shirt, a dictaphone record, and a missing wife.
Who was missing because her husband wanted it that way, but refused to stay missing when she received a letter containing a railroad ticket.
It was really the hotel maid.
Patsy, save something for next week.
What do you call your story, Nick?
I call it The Case of the Dictaphone Murder.
Nick Carter, Master Detective, which is produced and directed by Jock McGregor, is copyrighted by Street & Smith Publications, Incorporated. Pictured stories of Nick Carter appear in every issue of The Shadow Comics. In the broadcast of Nick Carter, Master Detective, Lon Clark is starred as Nick, Charlotte Manson is featured as Patsy. Original music is played by George Wright. Script is by Jock McGregor and Peggy Mayer. Any resemblance of these programs to actual persons, living or dead, or to actual places is purely coincidental. Nick Carter, Master Detective, is presented over most of these mutual stations each week at this same time. This is Hugh Sanders saying so long until next week. This program was heard in Canada through the facilities of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation.
That's Case Closed for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. You can find more from Nick Carter. Broadway Is My Beat, past episodes of Case Closed, and all the other shows at RelicRadio.com. Our Shoutcast stream is there, and our donate button. If you'd like to help support this and all the shows, you can do so through the website. My thanks, as always, to those who have, and thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next week with another episode of Case Closed.